The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
LinkedIn presents.
Becoming blind has given me access to a community and a perspective that has been more enriching and fascinating than anything else I've experienced. Blindness made me into a writer and gave my life a sense of purpose. If you see a blind or a disabled person, it's tempting to assume that his life is somehow basically flawed or broken, and that he's obsessively pining for a cure. But disabled people aren't broken. Start from that assumption and go from there, and you'll be surprised by the normalcy and joy you'll find everywhere in disabled life.
Hi, it's Tuesday. I'm Michael Kovnat. This is the Next Big Idea Daily. How's your eyesight? If you've got reasonably good vision, count your blessings. Globally, there are about 43 million people living with blindness and 295 million people with moderate to severe visual impairment. Many of these people started off sighted but lost their vision sometime during the course of their life due to accident or illness. One such person is the writer Andrew Leland, who's been gradually losing his eyesight due to a condition known as retinitis pigmentosa, as chronicled in his book, The Country of the Blind, A Memoir at the End of Sight. Andrew is a writer, radio producer, and editor whose work has appeared in the New York Times Magazine, The New Yorker, McSweeney's, The San Francisco Chronicle, and Art in America, among other outlets. Here he is to share what we can all learn from his experience.
Every creative person has had the experience of a constraint leading to innovation. Limitations force us to get creative and solve problems with flexibility and imagination. And no one is more familiar with this dynamic than disabled people. One blind visual artist told me, "When I think about blindness, I think about problem solving." Or, as another thinker observed, "Disabled people are the original life hackers." In my travels around the country of the blind, I found that blindness drove innovation that led to the invention of tools that benefited countless sighted people. The first typewriter patents, for instance, were filed for blind writing machines. If you want to know where the next major technological breakthrough will come from, one of the smartest places to look is in assistive technology and the disabled people quietly driving innovation there. Blindness is even behind the birth of the internet and modern AI. When Ray Kurzweil sat next to a blind man on a plane in the 1960s, he learned that access to printed material was one of the biggest problems of blindness. This conversation gave Kurzweil a real-world application for his work on optical character recognition, or OCR, which allowed a computer to scan a page of print and convert it to digital text. This technology was an important ancestor to the AI machine vision that today allows computers to scan barcodes and drive cars. Soon, Kurzweil's reading machine for the blind was being used by Xerox and LexisNexis to digitize entire archives, leading to the networked databases that laid the groundwork for the modern internet. Steve Jobs once said that Apple computers wouldn't have existed if it hadn't been for his work on little blue boxes, the DIY devices that he and Steve Wozniak built and sold from their garage. These devices allowed users to explore the back end of the national phone system. And without the group of brilliant blind hackers who inspired Jobs and Wozniak, blind kids who grew up obsessively playing with their phone lines and sharing their secrets with an underground network of phone freaks, Jobs and Wozniak might never have discovered those little blue boxes. Whenever you experience a setback, remember that it may also hold the seed of a breakthrough. Just as constraint drives innovation, there's a profound power to be found in the parts of our identity that sometimes diverge from the way we want to see ourselves. Making friends with these sometimes unwelcome aspects of our identity is one of the most empowering and liberating decisions one can make. Whenever I tell people that I'm losing my vision, they offer me condolences, as though I've told them that I have a terminal disease. And while it would be disingenuous to argue that losing my sight after a lifetime of vision was easy, or that I didn't have to wrestle with difficult emotions, the reality is that becoming blind has given me access to a community and a perspective that has been more enriching and fascinating than anything else I've experienced. Blindness made me into a writer and gave my life a sense of purpose. If you see a blind or a disabled person, it's tempting to assume that his life is somehow basically flawed or broken, and that he's obsessively pining for a cure. But disabled people aren't broken. Start from that assumption and go from there, and you'll be surprised by the normalcy and joy you'll find everywhere in disabled life. And remember that the parts of yourself that may feel like diminishments, that may push you painfully far from the mainstream experience are very likely to also contain the keys to a world that is richer and far more interesting than what lies on the beaten path. One of the blind people I spoke to for my book is Josh Mealy, a blind technologist and MacArthur Genius Fellow who now works for Amazon, making their devices accessible for people with disabilities. Josh told me about a job he had early in his career in which he learned how to build electrical circuits, tinkering and engineering with his blind mentor. This mentor would get calls about once a week from sighted inventors who had ideas for pointless devices to help the blind, phones that called 911 when you knocked them over, high-tech sippy cups, and laser canes. These calls infuriated Josh. He was soldering circuit boards, and they thought he couldn't figure out how to dial 911 on his own? This is an old story in disability. Non-disabled inventors who paternalistically suggest ideas without consulting the communities they want to serve. Generations of teachers for the blind tried inventing tactile reading systems that all failed. It took a blind tinkerer named Louis Braille to design a system that actually worked for blind readers. The lesson here is, whoever you think you're serving, there's a good chance you're causing more harm than good if you're not including them in the process, and not just as qualitative data points, but as active collaborators. If you've ever listened to an audiobook, you've probably had this experience. Someone recommends a book, and you say, "Oh yes, I read that," but then you catch yourself and sheepishly add, "Well, I didn't really read it, I listened to it, as an audiobook." I did this myself until my vision became weak enough that reading print became too difficult. Now I read audiobooks and use a screen reader, which renders any text I want in a synthetic voice.
"It sounds strange at first, but I promise you, your ear gets used to it."
Plenty of readers with perfectly good vision also use TTS. Once you get used to it, its power and convenience are hard to resist. Now, I'm an audio evangelist. I won't argue that it's the identical experience to reading visually, but if I listen to a book, I know I've read it. Cognitive scientists have found that the reading center in the brain, including the visual cortices, light up when we listen to text. Whether you're reading with your eyes, your ears, or your fingers, as I also do in Braille, it's all still reading. So stop apologizing for listening to audiobooks. Reading happens in the brain, and the ears are just as good a pathway to get there as the eyes are. Plus, just think of all the extra laundry you'll fold and dishes you'll wash as you plow through your reading list. We all experience identity as an essential marker. There are times when the fact that I'm a man, or an American, or a father feels like the most salient detail about me. But it's never that way every minute of the day. There are plenty of times when those identities melt away entirely, and I'm just a writer, an athlete, a home chef. This reality is trickier to navigate when the identity in question is more politically charged. There are many people who, after seeing my white cane, can only think of me as blind and lose sight of all the other things I might be. Writer, father, athlete. We tend to do this with marginalized characteristics, including race, gender, and sexuality. The challenge is to recognize someone's identity without letting it crowd out the rest of the person. We all want to be able to define ourselves. It's empowering to say who we are, and crushing when other people define us instead, for us. Remember this the next time you want to bring up someone's identity when it might not be relevant. You have the luxury of just being a pedestrian, full stop. Can you extend the same courtesy to the blind pedestrian, allowing them to define themselves? We too often let our uninformed ideas about other people guide our interactions with them. What would happen if we ignored these assumptions about their identities, their needs and abilities, and took it for granted that they're just as ordinary and human as we are?
Okay, that's it for today. Come on back tomorrow. We're going to talk about language with English professor Anne Curzon. She's written a book called Says Who, a kinder, funner usage guide for everyone who cares about words. Well, I care about words. I'm guessing many of you do too. So come on back to hear what Anne has to say on all matters grammatical. I'm Michael Kovnat. See you tomorrow.